science basement.
Hello and welcome to the Science Basement podcast, a podcast for those who love all things science. I'm your host Anastasia, joined by someone new. It's Marie Noelle, our lovely editor, who found herself in the hosting chair today.
Hi guys, I'm a French hospital pharmacist and I'm doing my postdoc here at the University of Helsinki in the Department of Pharmacology. I'm a sound editor in the Science Basement podcast team. Today I'm for the first time in front of the mic and I'm afraid of the number of ums and awkward pauses that the editor will have to cut out. I apologize in advance, but I'm excited to be here.
And I'm happy that you joined me today. We're moving forward with the second episode of our High Life mini-series. High Life stands for Helsinki Institute for Life Science, which is one of the leading research institutes for life science in the Nordics.
Many researchers these days are looking for ways to make something out of their research beyond the academic achievement of publishing articles. They want to get out of their ivory towers or their labs and engage with society. Today, we will discuss ways for researchers to make an impact beyond academia with a special emphasis on the business side of it.
And to break down this topic, we have two guests here with us. Johan Lundin, a research director at FIM. It's an institute of for molecular medicine in Finland, which is part of High Life. He's also a professor at Karolinska Institute in Sweden.
Our second guest is Andrea Gana, an associate professor at High Life and a research associate at the Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvard Medical School. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have a chance to talk to you. And I wanted to start off with the follow-up question to what Marie-Noelle just said in the beginning, because we as researchers are fully submerged in our academic lives and the main product of our research are our papers pretty much. But if we look deeper into the research that we are doing, we'll find that there is more to our work than just a scientific question. And what I wanted to ask from you was, what value do researchers bring in the society?
So, yes, scientists can bring value to the society in many ways. And one of those ways is to actually through business. So if you have a good idea, you have developed maybe a method, you have developed an instrument or a service, if you would like to see that being really used on a larger scale in the society, I think the only way is through developing a business out of it. A university can, of course, provide services and can do smaller scale, but if you really would like to see it in everyday use in hospitals all over the world, then I think a company is the only way.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and that's certainly an important aspect of the work we do. Clearly, it's important also to think about the production of our result to have a societal impact and think about that one way we can contribute is to make a scientific result more accessible to doctor, to patient. So one way is to, for example, take the data that are complex and difficult to interpret and make them simple and easier and extract information that can be accessed broadly, for example, through web portal. So I think this episode will mostly be about business, but there are many ways we can contribute.
Certainly. And because we're focusing on the business side, I probably would just follow up with a question of why should scientists even think of transforming their ideas into business?
Well, certainly because that's a way to get more money, and I think that's an important way. It's a way also to get excited about different things, it's about learning new things. I think when we stay in academia for too long, we learn a set of sort of rules and attitudes towards life, and being exposed to business, it's refreshing and can bring novelty to daily life, and sometimes have also an impact that goes beyond the research papers, for example.
Yeah, I fully agree that it's also, I think, I'm a medical doctor by training. I've been working most of my research career with technology, so applied to medical problems and trying to solve medical problems using technology. So, but if you then in that, you often have in mind some unmet need, something that should be better than it is now. So I think that's the situation where you really should think of translating also your ideas further on. I think most who are developing this kind of methods or services, they might think of what if this would be used on a larger scale. So, but you need to at the same time think carefully. So I think it's good to pitch your ideas early on if you have something in mind that could become a business. I think Elon Musk has said that he believes that the single biggest mistake that made by smart engineers is to optimizing something that shouldn't exist at all. So you should have a good, you should be visionary also. You should see the potential use and the need for a certain thing that you have been working with.
So you just told us why it's important for researchers to consider venturing into the business world, but why do it specifically in Finland? Is Finland a good place for entrepreneurs?
Maybe I can comment on that. So I think Finland has a really good startup community. We have, for example, events like the Slush that has become like a state-of-the-art event among startups in Europe, at least.
There's a very fierce competition to even be a volunteer at Slush, so it is pretty big.
So we have also instruments like, for example, University of Helsinki has Helsinki Innovation Services that can help researchers to develop their ideas and to take them further, to help them maybe protect the idea by patenting. And then we have also Business Finland, who is continuously looking for promising ideas that would become even bigger businesses. So in that sense, it's a good community. We also have in Finland angel investors who are also looking for ideas to invest in.
What are angel investors?
Angel investors are typically those that come first. If you have a need for money to develop your business, you need to look for potential investors. And typically they say the first ones would be friends, fools, and family to ask for support. But the next ones would be the angel investors that are looking for like really high risk stuff that is not proven yet. So, but then if you need bigger money, if it's like a new pharmaceutical compound that would maybe need large investments, then Finland is not maybe the best place.
I certainly just noticed that, at least from the emails that I've been receiving, that they're certainly in our university are trying to promote the businesses to the extent that if you patent your creation or your idea, then they will deliver baskets of food, like of cookies or even fruit, because in my lab we did have a patent and that was like, yeah, let's share this. I mean, it's small things, but it's really pleasant.
Yeah, and I think it's really the culture and the legislation. I think it's pretty unique, at least other, you know, country in Europe, opening a company is not so easy. You need social capital. So you need money when you open a company. It's not free. So the fact that you can open the company almost for free, the fact that is low risk to start a company, so where you're not going to start to lose money from your bank account, there are many instruments to avoid that. I think that's what makes the jump from a secure position to a risk position much easier than in other places.
So you mentioned that pharma industry is not a good field to get started in business or in Finland, but are there fields or disciplines that are more conducive to starting a business?
Yeah, I would maybe say that it's of course also possible to start have a startup in the pharma industry also in Finland, and there are several examples, but I was more kind of saying that you, if you need a big investment, meaning maybe 10 million or more to start with, then that could be tricky to do in Finland. But for sure you can get started, and many successful ones have also been started. So, but pharma business is always very challenging, and as we know, there are out of hundreds of potential pharmaceutical agents, there are only a few that actually are successfully brought all the way to the clinical use.
Andre, you also mentioned the databases and like their how helpful they can be like in delivering the data to clinical use. So do you think that this could also be a potential business?
Yeah, I think Finland is has two strengths, at least that I see. One is the genetic part. We have very large competitive biobank with genetic data, which make probably the second best country in Europe for that, maybe followed by UK. But for the size of the population, I think it probably make it the best country in Europe to do this type of research and investment. And that's why, for example, a project like FinGen has attracted major pharmaceutical industry. So that's one aspect. The second is the legislation on data access for secondary data use, which is pretty advanced in Europe. I would say is one of the most advanced. And so access to electronic health record, registry data, health data in general, it's easier than in other places. And while in other countries, this is mostly accessible only to universities or public bodies, here can be accessed by companies as well. And so that allowed development, for example, of AI tool for health data in a easier way than in other countries. So I think those two fields, in my opinion, are very promising for business development.
People should be taking notes right now. But let's say one of our listeners has an idea and which has a great commercial potential. So how would they, like, which steps should they take to turn that research idea into a business?
Yes, as I already said, it's very good to, if you have an idea, of course, if it's a novel thing that is like an innovation, you should first think of protecting your idea. So if you really think that your idea is unique and would be a potential candidate for patenting, then the first step is to talk to, for example, Helsinki Innovation Services within Helsinki University, and then you have your idea protected, because before anything else you should think of that. It's too late if you go out and talk to people about a potential patentable idea. You should first protect it. But then after that, I think it's a good idea to pitch with your colleagues, to listen to what they think about your idea. That's maybe the first step, because that would help you to then start creating also a business plan. And a business plan is a concept that, for me, when I started to, as an entrepreneur, it was like very unclear to me. I knew what a research plan is, but the business plan was somehow not very clear. But I have now understood that a business plan can be, to start with, very simple, maybe just a few pages, maybe a couple of PowerPoints summarizing what you would like to create a business out of. So then, of course, with time, it will evolve into a more comprehensive plan that includes all the components of a business plan.
Wait, are you supposed to go, when you're applying for funding, are you supposed to go to a place already having a full business plan in place? So this is something that you're preparing in advance before applying for a support, or is this something that you're developing together with the help of these incubators, for example?
I think you need to have an idea. The basic components of the business plan would, of course, be what's the product? Is it a some instrument? Is it some kind of a drug compound? Is it a service that you would, of course, need to be clear with? What are you going to sell? What is the company going to sell? But then, of course, you also will need to have some information. If you are talking to potential investors, you need to have information on who is going to do it. What will the team be? Will you have the right people? Will you have the resources? Will you have the rights to do it? Do you have a protection of your idea, for example, a patent or a copyright? So those basic components you need to have early on.
I would say also a team is incredibly important, because I attended at least one startup seminar and asked at the end, like, can you even start a business if you have an idea on your own? Like, is it even possible? And immediately the answer was no. It needs to be at least a team of two people. Yeah, nothing is done in a vacuum, really. Well, you mentioned also before that you should start early, but can the start be too early? Like, maybe the idea is not ripe enough, or maybe the society is not ready for this yet.
Yes, absolutely. And I think especially as a researcher, you are kind of in the forefront also of development. And you might be many steps ahead of the rest of the society. Your technology or your methods might be familiar to you, but they might not be still possible to apply, for example, in a clinical hospital environment. There's a long way to go there. So, but you need to think about if you feel that a lot is happening, not only in your lab or in your immediate vicinity, there are many, maybe you hear about a new type of technology that is being applied in several places, then you can imagine that it might quite quickly be a situation where this new method or technology could be in use. And then that timing is very difficult to determine. When we started to think about the business based on our technologies we had developed on the research side related to image-based diagnostics, we started already 20 years ago.
Wow.
To develop those. Early on, there was small-scale use within the university of the technologies for visualization of tissue samples that we had worked with. And we also thought that there is clearly a need, because the methods were used, for example, for educational purposes and for also for expert meetings and so on. And we actually we asked a consultant to find out if there would be a market for that. But that at that point, some 15 years ago, with the result of the consultant was that he said that it's a no-go, that it was not the market and time was not ripe. So then we waited for 5 more years. And then a lot had happened, and yeah, the technology had advanced, and then suddenly there was a situation that the market seemed to be there. Mm. And then, of course, you should move. But if you move too late, someone else has maybe already done it. So it's really tricky to find the right timing.
Well, you have to be always on your toes, I would say. It also sort of goes a little bit backwards to the societal impact of science, because in a way we also are impacting the policies, and there's a lot of consultation from the scientists on this side, and so in this way we can give influence in their decision making. It's like, oh, pay attention to these emerging fields because they will be a big deal in like 10 plus years.
Yeah, I think the job we do allowed us to see in the future, but sometimes we are too much in the future. We don't realize that there are very simple things that are needed. I see, for example, working with healthcare data, you think of very complicate AI algorithms to detect people which, you know, might develop cardiovascular diseases, but actually you can look at a full of people that should take their statin medication and they don't take them. And so the easier solution is not new AI algorithms, actually send an SMS to these people and tell them you should take your pills. So they're very simple solution. And sometimes because we are constantly focusing on innovating, we forgot of simpler approaches. On the other side, some of the simpler things might sound boring from a research side, but there's certainly some money to be made, probably.
And I think oftentimes the simplest solutions are the best, because by the end of the day, like, one of the things we also need to take into account while developing business, I'm saying just because also in my lab, again, we have people who made the startup, so I talk to them quite a lot, so I get a little bit of interest on that. But it's also the price, so it shouldn't be something too expensive. It needs to be something very available for people, so I would consider this as one of the important impacts. And again, like, here is what you said, is that the technology wasn't there, and if it's too costly to do, even the idea is there and the market is there, but just because it's too costly, it might not become a business.
Maybe I could comment on that, because I think that if we were talking about the timing, so related to timing, I think university environment is an excellent environment, because you can do further development of your method or instrument or service idea and actually test it in the university environment. That would be, in that sense, to some extent comparable to a company providing a product or a service. So in that way, the university is a very good environment. So you can do a lot, but you wouldn't be able to do it on large scale without the company. So if you are hesitating and you find your idea to be really promising, you can continue testing and then at the same time listening to your environment, what is happening. Is there maybe a market opening up for such an idea?
And of course, as you start the business, you can keep on improving the method, and in a way, if there is already, I'm trying to say that maybe sometimes, like, we may feel a bit guilty for turning, like, our pure science and love for science into something that is usually considered rather selfish, like business, but in a way it also can help improve, because it's gaining some profit, and I don't know. To me, that's very interesting.
Profit, it's a good driver. Another good driver is learning new skills and the excitement of having to deal with problems which are not technical in nature, are interpersonal. And some of that we have it clearly in academia. But I think in business, because you're actually selling a product, there are something, I think, that becomes natural probably before spending too much time in academia. I think the selling part, if you stay long in academia enough, they get completely erased. And so it's a good way to get out and sort of get resurfacing the ability to sort of sell your idea or sell your product.
That's a very good point. And here, as a science communicator myself, and because we're from the science base and we do science communication, I just want to again promote science communication, because once you are selling something, especially a complicated scientific idea, it's very important to bring this to a digestible form that everybody, especially businessmen who are very short on time, they will immediately grasp what it's about, why is it important, what kind of benefit it's going to bring to them.
Yeah, I think if you compare presenting in a research environment to presenting in a business environment, so they are, of course, different. In a research environment, you can be, you should be as objective as possible, and of course you should present your results as they are, and then you should listen carefully to possible questions and criticisms. In the business environment, when you do pitching, you need to be more visionary, and you need to present it as being very promising, of course. Mm-hmm. To be successful in the future. In that situation, your previous role as a scientist and is to some extent challenged, because in science you don't do those kind of promises of the bright future. You to some extent might tell about potential applications of a method in the future, but in the business you need to really be clear that there will be a product that will become possible to sell and that will be also taken up by the market. So you have seen in happening in the society several of these mistakes. Also, there are famous mistakes made by, for example, the Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos, who she had a fantastic idea of creating a way of taking a blood sample with very simple method that could be used almost at home. And then a method of determining from that sample a large number of molecules and compounds. And that the idea was fantastic, but she was too far ahead with her visions presented to the investors. So I can imagine that at some point she really must have thought that, is this really going to be possible? I think she, at the beginning, she definitely thought that it's going to be possible. But that's a very tricky situation you feel as a scientist when presenting, when you're doing pitching, staying still objective, but not being too modest, because if you are too modest, you will not get any investors.
Yeah, I think when you see pitching competition from startups as a researcher, I get a little bit itchy, because I'm like, I know you are bullshitting. I know you are saying things that are not true. I feel very uncomfortable, but I guess it they're that part. Yeah, that's some expectation on that. At the same time, why, you know, in science presentation, we put limitation on our slides, which I always found it, you know, one of the few fields where you're basically presenting how great is your research, but you're actually, you know, at a certain point saying all the problems that you have with your research. So I think, you know, both sides have their pros and cons. And I think one, though, needs to feel comfortable, I think, what he's saying to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's a thin line to walk.
Well, I mean, it takes a bit of skill and trials and errors, I guess.
So since we were talking about the different mindset of researcher and when you are pitching or when you are presenting your research, generally entrepreneurship might be exciting for many researchers, but also scary for others. So what type of mindset is valuable for becoming an entrepreneur? And how can one be challenged but not dragged down by the transition?
Yeah, I think personality-wise, you need to be persistent and optimistic if you go for a business career. And you need to be prepared to be constantly criticized by potential investors, because your pitch will never be received. You will never get like applause for your pitch. I haven't seen any of those. Maybe at Slush at the event when there is someone winning a pitching competition. But otherwise, you need to be prepared to be criticized. So it's a little bit like an idols competition or something that you always, yeah, there is always something wrong with your idea and that you need to be prepared for. Of course, you should listen carefully. There might be things you need to change in your whole idea and concept. But you should also be prepared to stay with your idea, to believe in your idea. So that's what I would say, that believe in your original idea, but listen carefully to feedback.
Yeah, I do agree. And I think it is, you know, you need to reach out to people, you need to speak with people, you need to engage, sell your product. So you need at least some desire of being surrounded by people and speak with people. I think in academia, it's a very comfortable place also for people that are very introverted. It might get a little bit more difficult in business. I don't know, there, I think, like, you know, if you're really, really good software engineer and you build, you know, your code that or your software, you is really good, you can probably sell it even without speaking with people. But in general, it is a job that requires reaching out.
And related to that, I think what you should do very early on also is to look for talented people in your surroundings.
We're back to teams.
Yes, exactly, because you will need people with different types of skills. So that I would definitely recommend that you should keep continuously like scouting for potential team members of a startup, because you will need the different skills.
I would say also to the feedback part, probably it's more fierce when you're pitching a business idea. I would say it still is very hard to overcome any type of negative feedback, and like coming from the grant writing course, being grilled in front of everyone for how badly it was written, I can certainly relate. It's just like you just breathe in, breathe out, take it in, and then try to get the best use out of what they told you. So maybe in a way, like overcoming your own ego is something that's also very important there. Like knowing your own value, of course, but also not to the extent that it would block from receiving any positive feedback.
So you mentioned the importance of surrounding yourself with good team members, but can you rely on them for everything? You talked previously about developing business plans. That's probably beyond the typical skill set of many researchers. Can you rely on the team members, or is there a need for reskilling here? In other words, do we need to go to business school and get an MBA to become entrepreneurs?
No, I don't. You don't need to do that. You should have, if it's possible, you should have maybe one team member that has that kind of training. Maybe not an MBA, but yeah, training to read a financial statement and to do the accounting and so on to start with. So, but you should, of course, trust your company members, all those who are with you on the team. So that's, of course, really crucial. Because to begin with, in a startup, everyone does everything. So there are no clear roles to start with. You just all together try to achieve the first steps needed.
Yeah, but the point of teams and trust to people that you work with keeps coming back everywhere I talk to people, I think. And it's one of the key components to success, I think. And taking that you've already achieved so much, you probably can speak also more on that. Like how important people actually are in your life to in order to achieve something great.
Yeah, I mean, it is important to hire good people and work with good people. And I think everyone agree on that. Maybe an underappreciated aspect is that it's important to manage people. You don't need always, you know, the best, the smartest. There are some people that if you, you know, do careful managing and you find the right path for the person, they can blossom and they can become, you know, supporting leader. I think there is concept of superstar and rock star. And the rock star are the team member that are solid, that will always be there. They're not overachiever, but they build the foundation of the group. And how to find rock star and how to find sort of the space where they feel comfortable to stay and where they want, you know, continue thriving their part in the team, it's what a good manager is able to do.
And I think you should be, of course, prepared to, if you are a group of people, let's say 3 to 5 to start with, probably there will be some issues within that group, and you will need to have some kind of redundancy that the whole idea should not rely on only one person. There needs to be some backup. So that's absolutely how you need to think.
probably one thing to add is that at least what at PI level, because of the I don't think PI in academia arrive prepared to the job of management, but eventually you need to do management. But I think it is very difficult for, you know, a postdoc or a PhD student to think about being a manager and a mentor, just because the academic career sort of bring people as individuals, and you can do great science by basically working almost alone, depending on the type of science, but there is this opportunity. While if you take a similar person with similar age, for example, of a postdoc, that person might have multiple company experience and have built a very strong management skill. While if your entire career has been in academia, you've basically been digging down in your technical skill, but not build that part. So I think that sort of a shortcoming probably coming to the business from academia versus being already trained in industry.
It's a very good point indeed.
So moving on from shortcomings, and earlier we mentioned that you have to be persistent and you have to have a tough skin, but what are the main challenges researchers face when they develop their business?
I come to think of one challenge is for the researcher to decide if the researcher will continue, if you will continue to work in academia at the university, or if you will jump fully into the company that you have formed. That is a crucial decision, and it's hard to make. If you decide to try to do both, there will be challenges both at the university side and at the company side. It's hard to have like two roles. So what I have recommended, I have tried all the time after the company that we founded, I have tried to do both. For a long time, I worked part-time at the company, part-time at the university. But then it was difficult for colleagues and company people to understand what I'm representing at a certain point in time. Am I now representing the company, or am I talking for the research side?
So changing masks.
Yeah, two hats or two masks. So that is something everyone should think of, because depending on how you see yourself, if you think you are a researcher but you would like to see your idea become a product, of course you need to have a company. But then it's also you should think of how fully will you commit for each of those. If you decide to continue doing only research, the company is less likely to succeed, because if you are the starting point, you have the idea, you have developed the method, you are needed also at the company side. So I would recommend that you at least would take a break and move fully to the company for a certain period of time. Maybe if you have a possibility to come back to academia later. But doing both is, that's very tough.
So in the beginning, there are actually many challenges that you need to tackle. But would you say that they reduce over time? Because when we are starting even a new project, it's always some new questions coming up. And for academics who have no experience in business, it may be a completely new venture. And so it may take a lot of effort emotionally and in terms of like intellectual challenge to overcome. So would you say that it will just get better?
Do you mean?
As your company develops.
Yes, yeah. I would say no.
I was thinking the same.
Because to run a company, to be part of a company, especially a startup, it's continuous challenges. There are hurdles along the way of different kind, and they will not stop. They actually the opposite. The bigger a company grows, even the more versatile and different are the challenges. So, no, unfortunately, no. it's not going to be easier with time.
Shoot. Well, that's what life is, I guess.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the challenge with startup is that they need to become profitable and you need to sort of sustain an enterprise with budget for a long time, especially if their investor are not happy to let you go. It's not like a research project, you get a grant, the project doesn't really work, and then you're like, well, too bad, I tried. I think if there are money of other people involved, they say, okay, this failed, so try something else, and you maybe are done, and you know, you want to go back to the lab and do your things, and it's not so easy.
Yeah, I would say that the company experience that I have of Iphoria Technologies since 10 years back, so there has been so many milestones where everything could have gone wrong. So it could have gone wrong in recruiting the right people. It could have gone wrong in getting the technology to work, the whole idea, and in attracting investors, in finding the market fit, meaning that the product is something that is possible to sell, and to getting also bigger deals signed. All those are continuously appearing over time. So there will be challenges along the way.
Well, and of course you want your business to develop. So how often do startups or businesses fail when it comes to like scientific ones? I mean, it doesn't have to be.
I think that at least the venture capitalists that are then the next step of investments that you can get for a company after the angels, and then I think they, at least they would like to see maybe 1 in 5 companies to succeed at that level, but that's a little bit further along the way. Venture capitalists don't invest in startups directly. They wait for the company to mature. But then I think they would expect 20% to succeed.
Oh, that's so very low.
But that's quite low, yes. So I think that's what I have understood. And if you would look at all startups, I think it's even much lower, I guess. And it depends on what you count as successful. I mean, you can have also a small-scale business that is working well, profitable, maybe not employing that many people, and could definitely be profitable, but maybe not a global company.
Well, I think as long as it survives, can consider this as successful. I mean, with the rate of 20%, that's already a good job.
Yeah. Yes. It's higher than certain grants.
It is a little bit higher.
I mean, in a sense, in academia, we are used to failure rate that might be higher than business. So
yeah,
we're choosing out of two bad pills here.
Maybe following up to the last point from Johan, like the idea that starting a business means to be the new Google or the new Pfizer or the new big biotech company, maybe that's, you know, the wrong attitude to start with a startup, and it's also a little bit scary, and that's what pushing a lot of people away, and also a lot of people think about crazy ideas because they need to be ultra innovative and they need to be new. But there is also thinking about what you do, right? You're really good, for example, in certain analytical skills that you have developed during your postdoc or during your PhD. Can they be marketed? Can I start a company aside that use my skills and sell it to certain other company? And then, you know, it doesn't need to be IP involved. It can be like you provide services. And I think that's the most natural way to start a business, because you know, if you think there is need for people selling shoes and people selling, you know, snacks at this, you know, there are many different business that can be done without being, you know, ultra innovative. So you can start with that and then see if you like it. And if you like it, you can start to think, okay, I have my client, I have some money, you probably don't need investor in the beginning. And then what can I do new? You get comfortable, you start to create IP, and then you build it from there.
Yeah, I fully agree that you can also think smaller scale if you want to start a business out of research. I think what you then find if you go to events like Slush, or if you start talking to Business Finland to get some support for funding support, they would like to see the minimum 100 million revenue companies being created. So that's why that's why I think you might perceive that you always need to think big, but it's not true.
And how does HiLife fit into this picture? Are there any specific services, for example, that HiLife has that would support business ventures, or maybe they try to like push some enthusiasm into people? It's like, come on, why don't you?
Yes, at least I have received from HiLife some years ago this proof of concept grant, which was actually very valuable in that situation. So, and I understood that there were now, a couple of months ago, there were new grants that, yeah, I don't know if they have already been decided for this year. But
well, maybe by the time the episode is released, they will be.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, this whole world is so different from academia. And I think in this way, it also can be very exciting because it's so challenging. I think that would be it for today. And thank you very much for coming. It was definitely a lot of food for thoughts for us and for our listeners. And I think we're all well equipped now to at least start thinking about our businesses and even like starting them. And wishing to everybody who does this best of luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thanks for having me also.
With that, we're going to wrap up this episode. It was episode 2 of our HiLife mini-series. Stay tuned for the next one when we are talking about mentoring and development of scientific talents. Of course, don't forget to check out our social media, Instagram or Twitter, by the same name, The Science Basement Podcast. And we really appreciate your feedback. It helps us to improve our content. And again, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic day. And we'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. The Science Basement.
If you liked this episode, give it a thumbs up, rate it on the podcast app of your choice, and don't forget to share it with your friends. This podcast was produced by The Science Basement, a science communication organization based in Helsinki, Finland. Interested in being involved or interviewed? Get in touch at the podcast@thesciencebasement.org.